Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast. This is your host, Jake Devereaux, and today joining me for episode 81 is Matt Collins of Over the Monster. Matt, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So, first thing I want to talk about on the podcast today is David Price. David Price is someone who we talk about entirely too much. It seems like mostly negative when he's brought up, but since May 12th, David Price has been doing some pretty impressive stuff. Over his last seven starts, he's had a 2.64 ERA, a 1.04 WHIP, 47 strikeouts to just 14 walks over the last 44 innings pitched. I think it's fair to say he has been pitching like an ace. Matt, how the hell has he been doing this, and what did he change?
I mean, he's good. I think that's the biggest thing. He had a few bad starts mixed in, but he got off to a really good start. Had like a bad four starts and out of five. But I mean, he's been good pretty much all year. I think the thing that stands out the most right now is his command. You kind of see that he's not throwing anything besides fastballs and cutters for the most part. He's had a few starts in this run where he's thrown in the changeup here and there. Last night was not one of those nights. I don't know if I saw more than like two or three off-speed pitches. So it's risky throwing like all those hard pitches and that's all you're throwing. But when you're painting the edges of the zone like Price can when he's at his best, I mean, he's going to dominate. He has good enough stuff that it doesn't matter if he's only throwing fastball cutter with that command. He's going to do what he's doing now. He's just super talented.
Yeah, since the start of June, it does look like his stuff has ticked up a little bit as well. In terms of velocity, he's been throwing right around 94, a little bit over 94 over his last three starts if you average those together, with the four-seam fastball. Sinker's caught up a little bit as well. That's been around 93, 94, and the cutter's up about a mile an hour as well. So he is throwing harder. I wonder if that's indicative of basically the fact that he's feeling a little bit better.
Yeah, probably. I mean, this is the May 12th date, I believe, correlates pretty much exactly with like the peak of that Shaughnessy Fortnite nonsense. So he was definitely feeling something, and now he's not anymore. And I know people want to hand wave the health and say it was being afraid of the Yankees or whatever the fuck the excuse was, but I mean, he was clearly hurt and he's clearly looking a lot better now.
Yeah, I still think it is dangerous what he's doing. Like, not throwing basically any off-speed pitches is dangerous, and like you said, if you're painting, that's totally fine, but as soon as that control is off one night, he could easily get blown up. I mean, the last few outings, the most curveballs he's thrown has been five. He did throw 10 curveballs against Toronto, which was on the May 12th start. But every start since then, it's been 1-4, 1-2, 1-5. I mean, it's barely there. The one thing that I have seen, though, over the last three starts that we've seen his velocity be up a little bit is that he's thrown that four-seam more. And last night, he threw a season-high 27 four-seam fastballs.
Yeah, he was leading super heavy on that. It seemed like, I don't know the exact breakdown, I could be talking to my ass right now, but there were just a couple hitters. Segura specifically is one that I remember that he was just like only attacking with four seamers. So I think that was part, I don't know if we're gonna see that a lot. That might have just been scouting that they saw something in this Mariners lineup. But to your point about the arsenal and not using the off speed, I mean, his changeup has looked good when he's thrown it. I mean, it's not a matter of he doesn't really have confidence in it or he should have confidence in it is what I mean to say, because it's looked great. And so I wonder if we'll see a start where he doesn't have that command and then that's when he'll be willing to throw the off-speed more, because if that's the plan to hold off until he absolutely needs it, that's fine with me.
Yeah, I mean, if he can keep doing whatever he's doing and producing results, it's definitely it's what the team needs. I mean, right now the team is operating at peak levels with him healthy, Pitching like this plus Chris Sale, like it's kind of the dream right now.
The rotation is incredible at the moment. Everybody is pitching well, even like Porcello and Rodriguez, who we kind of feel like aren't doing that great. It's a lot because they're pitching with Sale and Price and Steven Wright, who's going nuts right now. So, I mean, they're allowing two or three runs pretty much every start. And I've always thought that pitching was the strength of this team. For a little bit, the offense is carrying them. But if they're going to be the best possible version of this roster, it's going to be a team that's led by great starting pitching.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that's the separator. That's even what separates this team from, you know, other great teams like the Yankees, is just the pitching is a step above when it's on. To Price's success, though, one of the things that I have noticed over this seven-game stretch is that he just hasn't been giving up any home runs. He's only given up three over that stretch, which is something that really plagued him in the past. So I think that he's certainly made some adjustment to try and prevent those home run balls.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just goes back to the command. And, I mean, his cutter is sick, and it has been sick pretty much all season. So unless he's thrown a couple of flat ones, obviously, that's going to happen. But, I mean, that's a pitch that's pretty much impossible to square up. Anytime anybody gets a hit off one of his cutters, that's good. I don't understand how it's possible. So I think part of it is it would seem like if you're throwing a lot of fastballs and a lot of hard pitches, you're going to give up more home runs. But most of his hard pitches are two seam fastballs, which are going to move, obviously, in the cutter, which is impossible to square up. So it kind of makes sense.
Yeah, it definitely does. And hopefully he can keep this up, because that would be good for everybody involved in this scenario. Good David Price is awesome, and
it's
relatively
yeah.
quiet too.
Yeah, I don't really care about that. Go, you're throwing like this, say whatever the hell you want. But yeah, I mean, we've said it a million times all year. He's arguably the most important player on this team, so we're seeing it. We're
yeah.
seeing why.
Tonight, as we record this, the Red Sox are going to be going up against one of the best pitchers in the American League, in James Paxton. Paxton has been awesome this year. He did have that no-hitter as well, which was pretty cool. The one thing about Paxton...
He got attacked by the eagle, right? That was him?
Yeah, that was him.
Yeah.
Bird, like, landed right on his head, and he was surprisingly calm by
yeah,
it.
Yeah, he didn't react at all.
No.
That was probably my favorite moment of the season.
Well, he's Canadian, too, so I wonder,
yeah.
like, what type of wilderness he's used to, just, like, being all up in his face like that. I mean, has he had a grizzly bear? Like, there's a lot of questions I have after this.
I would have ran off the field. I don't know how he did what he did, but
no.
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen the talons on those things?
I know.
If that gets a Jesus. Hold of his eye, his career is over.
I know. That's the thing. It was like a scary moment while it was happening, but after now it's just hilarious.
Well, anyway, the Big Maple, which is a great nickname, by the way, he's going to be going up against the Sox, but this is not particularly good news for the Red Sox. Not only is he pitching at home at Safeco Field, but the Red Sox are 23rd in baseball with an 85 weighted runs created plus against lefties this year. It's certainly been a big struggle for this team. It's one of the disparities between the Red Sox and Yankees. Yankees can definitely hit lefties. The Red Sox cannot. Red Sox are batting 119 weighted runs created plus against righties, which is best in baseball. So that discrepancy is pretty big. First against righties, 23rd against lefties. How big of an issue is this for the Red Sox?
I'm not super concerned right now, but I mean, it's definitely an issue. And part of it is that Benintendi has just been so bad, and against lefties, obviously he's been amazing overall, but he still hasn't really figured it out against lefties. And I mean, he's such a big part of this lineup every night that they can't really afford him to keep doing this. So some of it, I'm trying to pull up the numbers right now and I'm kind of stalling while I do it, but some of it I feel like is unsustainable I feel like JD Martinez has a 121 WRC plus against lefties. He's going to be better than that. Nunez is better against righties, which is kind of weird. I feel like he should be like a perfect platoon partner for Devers, but he's not. So I think they're going to look at the deadline for a right-handed bat that can hit lefties to help this out. But for the most part, it just needs to be their stars. Betts has killed lefties, but other than that, guys just have to step up, and that mostly Benintendi.
Yeah, I mean, Benintendi should step up here. JD, like you said, I totally agree. He should be better. Xander Bogaerts is one that I think should be better against lefties than he is.
He's actually been pretty good this year. I guess it depends. I mean, 143 WRC plus, but that is with pretty much no power.
Right.
So I think you kind of expect him to stay at that level of overall production, just kind of doing it differently. Right now he's walking a ton and he has a huge BABIP. So the BABIP will probably come down, but the power will go up. So I don't really know if he's been a big issue. But yeah, I think it's Devers, it's Benintendi, it's Nunez, it's Martinez, it's Moreland, it's the catchers have been horrendous. Bradley's been bad, but he's pretty much not playing against lefties anymore at this point.
You know what is scary, though? If the Red Sox don't win the division, and this is looking way down the road, imagine them matching up against Paxton in a one-game playoff. That would be scary as hell.
Yeah, but then, I mean, the Mariners would say the same thing about matching up against Chris Sale, so...
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's just, it's one of those things you got to think about. Good news is, though, the Yankees and the Astros both only have one lefty starter, CC Sabathia, who's like 200 years old, and yeah, Dallas Keuchel.
CC is incredible.
CC kills us.
That's what I'm saying. Don't downplay the CC angle, because he's a Red Sox killer. But yeah, the Red Sox have like all of the good lefties. So it's if you're going to be a team that's bad against lefties, a good strategy is just to hoard all the good lefties.
Yeah. Corner of the market on lefties.
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about it.
Exactly.
Bizarrely, though, the Red Sox have been pretty damn good against Aroldis Chapman, who's that ace lefty reliever. So I don't know what the hell's going on.
I feel like they've just seen him so many times. So much more than pretty much any other team that they just kind of know the strategy. I think, as far as tonight goes, this is totally bizarre, but Cora said that Paxton has reverse splits this year, so he's going to stack the lineup with lefties, even though that's like a one-year thing for Paxton.
That's weird. He seems to be reacting to a micro trend.
Yeah, so I don't know. I definitely don't like that, but at the same time, I don't really know what that means, like who's going to sit. Like, if that means Holt playing over Nunez, I can live with that.
Yeah, I'm fine with that pretty much any day against anybody at this point.
Yeah, me too. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, it was a weird quote, but I don't know how much that really changes anything.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see once that lineup card comes out. But I think we should get to it. We've sort of been burying the lead here. But there was a very spicy Ken Rosenthal article that came out suggesting that the Red Sox might be a good fit for the Baltimore Orioles trading Manny Machado and Zach Britton. And so the package that he talked about with this hypothetical trade was something like a Machado, a Britton, and a prospect for a Rafael Devers or an Andrew Benintendi. Matt, how do you feel about this possibility? And do you think that it has any chance of a snowball's chance in hell of actually happening?
I mean, there's like a not a 0% chance. It's a 0% chance it'll be Benintendi. I'll say that.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah,
that makes no sense to me.
I didn't even know Benintendi was mentioned in that, and I read the article. I don't remember seeing his name, but yeah, Benintendi's not going anywhere. Devers, I can kind of see it. I definitely don't expect it, but if the Red Sox are going to make a big move, it's going to be something like that. And it's going to be a guy off the major league roster because they don't have anybody that's not on the major league roster. So Joyner wrote about it today. And, I mean, it really just comes down to if you have an extension in place or at least feel really good about your ability to extend Machado. You're not giving up Devers for a half year, Machado. I don't think he makes you that much better this year that it would be worth it. But, I mean, if you are feeling good about getting an extension done, I think you have to do it. And I think a lot of people are kind of waving it off as ridiculous, but I mean, what's the best case scenario for Devers? That he's as good a hitter as Manny Machado without being nearly as good on defense?
Yeah, that would be absolutely best case scenario, and that's hard to dream up, actually.
Yeah, so I mean, if you can extend Machado, then you do that every single time.
But what's his 25? Incentive to extend with the
Well, that's the thing. That's why I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But
would you – so let's just look at it this way, though. Would you take the risk of having him come here with that package? Obviously, that's why you're getting guys like Britton and another prospect or whatever in that package for Devers, is because Machado can help you win now. Britton can help you win now. And the prospect helps restock the farm system. And sure, you lose 5 years of control for Devers for potentially a half year of Machado. But do you take that risk, even if you don't have an extension in place, that, hey, we're the Red Sox, like, we can meet whatever in the offseason, and he can help us potentially win a World Series this year?
Yeah, so it's hard for me to say, because they know, like, they can go through back channels, and, like, they don't have to agree to an actual extension, but they can kind of get a feel, like, would you want to play in Boston? Are we going to have to, like, overpay over, say, the Yankees? Or, like, if it was close, you would go to Boston. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have to have kind of a feel of how he feels about Boston, which I don't have. But if you feel like you have a realistic chance and you're willing to spend the money and, like, not use that luxury tax threshold as a barrier, then, yeah, I think you do it. But I don't know. I'm not sure enough about any of that to say for sure that they should or shouldn't.
So I think immediately it would make the team way better. The thing is that I have trouble with is, like, this is sort of a situation kind of like when the Yankees brought on Alex Rodriguez. He was a better shortstop than Derek Jeter, and he's the one that ended up playing third base. I know that Xander hasn't been a great defender when he has played third, but I wonder how Machado would feel about ceding shortstop to Xander, because he's clearly better.
I don't know if he would.
You think Xander would move to third?
I think it would be possible. I think Machado's made it. I mean, that would be another thing. You would have to see what Machado wants to do, but Machado's made it very clear that he wants to play shortstop.
Right. I just don't – it's tough to see Xander moving over.
Yeah. It's kind of tough to see Machado going back to third too, though, right?
And so good at third. Like, that's the thing. The difference between what Xander could be at third and what Machado can be at third is the best defender in baseball at third and, what, maybe an average guy?
But it's more about – I mean, the idea is that you want to keep Machado in Boston long term.
Right.
And so you want to keep him happy. And as much as I like Bogaerts – Machado would take precedent there. And if Machado wants to play shortstop, Machado's playing shortstop.
That would make it all the more likely that you would let Bogaerts walk, though, when his arb years are up, though. If you were to move him over to that position, there's no way he signs on long term.
Probably. But again, you would rather have Machado, though, right?
I guess. I mean, I
guess.
Yeah, you know how I feel about Bogey.
Yeah,
I just feel like there's so much promise there still.
Yeah, promise to be like a worse defensive player than Machado with like similar offensive skills.
Yeah, I know.
Like, again, this is like the head Machado is who you want these guys to be.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But it's just it's tough to think about. It's weird. It's weird to think about, especially with all the shit that's gone down with the Sox and Machado over the years, you know? Machado hasn't exactly endeared himself to the Red Sox fan base.
Yeah. What, the slide? I still feel like the Red Sox came out looking worse in that whole situation than Machado did.
But Machado hasn't just done this one time. He's got into it with Donaldson. He's got into it with the Sox. He's got kind of a reputation for being a hothead.
Yeah, but I mean, who, like, Red Sox have had players like that, and the people have been embraced. If Machado came to the Red Sox, people would love Machado. Like, there's no doubt in my mind about that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll buy his jersey if that
Yeah, exactly.
happens, so.
People don't really like David Price, but when David Price is pitching like he is right now, people like David Price. He was hated before he came here. Alex Rodriguez would have been embraced. Like, it's all about what jersey you're wearing. That's all that matters.
I still wouldn't buy David Price's jersey.
Well, I wouldn't buy any jersey because they're outrageously expensive, but
That's true.
it's a
It's
different.
all about the jersey for me.
I don't even buy those. I just buy a plain shirt. This is Red Sox.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, is this a good idea though? Like, if this was
It
on
should
the
be
table,
explored.
but would you do it? If it's on the table, if the Orioles call up tomorrow and they're like, "All right, here it is. This is for, we'll do this deal for Devers. Here's what
Give
you get."
me scale 1 to 10. How good do they feel about their chances to re-sign Machado?
Let's say they feel 7 out of 10 to re-sign Machado.
Yeah, I'm doing it.
Yeah. How low would you go? Like, if they were 50-50, 5 out of 10, would you
I would
still
need to
do
be
it?
more than 50-50.
Okay, so anything over 50-50, you're doing it.
Yeah. And they have to, I mean, this, a lot of it's on them too. It's not just on Machado. They have to be willing to go fall 10 spots in the draft.
Right.
They just do because they have sales coming up and bets is coming up. They're going to be spending a lot of money coming up. And so it's up to them if they want to spend the money or not.
Yeah, I agree though. If it's over 50-50, you have to do this because.
Especially, I mean, if you're getting Britton back too, that's not a small thing.
No. Britain's
That's
awesome.
huge. They don't have a lefty in their bullpen.
And
Like, they
that's
have
a
Brian Johnson
dominant
right now.
lefty.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. He's only had one appearance, I think.
That sinker
He
is
controls.
ridiculous,
No,
though.
if he's like totally healthy and he's looking like he was before the injury, then absolutely he's disgusting.
Thing's a freaking bowling ball.
Yeah.
That's
Yeah, he's great.
ridiculous.
I also don't know that the Orioles are going to trade them together. I don't know why they would do that.
It wouldn't seem to make sense, but I guess if you're in a position where you can get somebody like Devers, because I think
Devers, yeah,
Devers is
that's
pretty much like, that's the best possible return you could get for a guy like that.
Yeah, that's fair. I still don't like I said, I don't really expect any of this to happen, but it's not ridiculous.
That would be so good though, because if that occurs, and even if you think there's 60% chance you can keep Machado, keeping Machado means that you're getting him for this year against the Yankees. You're improving your defense, you're improving your offense, and you're keeping him away from the Yankees.
Yeah, that was Joyner's big point in his post this morning, is that you're not only like adding Machado to your roster, you're taking him off the Yankees roster. That's obviously huge. I think he's going to end up with the Dodgers anyways. I think this is all kind of moot, but
You think the Dodgers end up with him and Harper?
I'm talking about at the deadline. I don't know what's going to happen this offseason, but I think Machado makes too much sense for them at the deadline.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Well, we'll have to see how that goes. Don't expect it, people.
No.
Brandon Workman, I want to talk about him. He's been up now for 5.1 innings pitched. The guy's got a 0 ERA since coming back up from Pawtucket. He has looked really, really good. Have you noticed any change in the way he's pitching?
Well, not particularly. His curveball's been sick. But I feel like his curveball's always been sick when he's at his best. So I think he's just on a good run. I think people are a little too excited about him, but I get it. I mean, I've been watching him. He's been amazing. It's hard, still hard to put away like those 2013 memories. He was pitching in the playoffs. So I think he's a useful major league reliever. I don't think he's like someone you want in your top three, but the Red Sox have a lot of interesting guys that can bounce between Boston and Pawtucket for the bullpen during the dog days, and Workman probably the best out of them, or at least deserves the chance to run into a bigger role than that. So, he's been impressive. I don't know if he's going to keep this up, but he's definitely something to be excited about.
Yeah, I'm definitely intrigued by what I've seen from him. We know he's been good in the past when he's been healthy. But the curveball that you mentioned, he's actually thrown that pitch 33% of the time, which is the highest rate that he's ever thrown it in his career. Granted, it's only over a really short period of time, so we don't really know if that's going to keep up. But right now, since he's been up, he's been mixing his pitches between the four-seam, cutter, and curveball more than he ever has in the past. So I wonder if he really has changed the way that he's pitching and approaching things.
He's also way older than everybody thinks he is. You know how old he is?
I want to say he's 28.
He's 29.
29, okay.
He's going to be 30 in August.
Okay.
So he is changing because he's a 30-year-old pitcher who's probably losing a little bit on his fastball. And he's going – and it's good to see that he's doing this. It's showing that he can stick around. So I don't know if I'm – I'm kind of talking myself out of him, which I didn't really want to do. I like Workman. I think he's probably gone sooner rather than later. I mean, I think Thornburg's going to be back soon. So I'm more excited about Thornburg than Workman right now. But yeah, Workman's going to be in the mix all year, along with Thornburg. And I think Ty Buttrey's a guy that we should probably be talking about a little bit more. I think Chandler Shepherd might get a chance in the bullpen in kind of a Hector Velasquez role. There's a lot of interesting guys.
Buttrey still needs a map to find the strike zone occasionally, though.
He's been outstanding this year, especially over the last like month or so.
Do you trust that he can keep that command at the major league level?
I think he deserves a chance to see. It's tough because the Red Sox have played so well that they should have like a cushion that they can kind of mess around with the stuff, but the Yankees are like annoying as fuck, so they can't do that. But yeah, I mean, I think Buttrey's earned a chance. You're right, it might not translate, and that could end up being costly in this race. So I think we'll see him get a chance, but Workman's ahead of him, Thornburg's ahead of him.
Yeah, he's definitely an intriguing guy, though. I wonder if he could be someone that could be a chip.
Buttrey? Yeah, I could see it.
Yeah.
They kind of have a little bit of log jam, though.
Yeah, they've got a lot of guys. It's not a bad thing to have this many bullpen arms that you can swap in and out, like you said. It certainly has been useful for keeping guys fresh.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, Buttrey is a guy that's been able to go multiple innings. Workman can go a couple innings if you need it. Shepard's starting right now, so obviously he could go a couple innings. I don't know if they would put him back in the bullpen for a little bit. But if they would, I mean, that would be – they have so many of these multi-inning arms, and it's huge.
The last 3 weeks you've been on, Matt, you've talked about Chandler Shepherd. I think you've got a thing for him right now.
Yeah, well, I do. I'm surprised. Like, I was not expecting him to stick in the rotation as long as he has. Like, he's been a reliever his whole professional career. Over the winter I forget where he played, Mexico or the Dominican or something. In a winter league, they had him start, and I figured it was just to like get him to throw some innings, and then they just kept doing it, and he's been really good. I don't know. I don't want to – I'm going off on a tangent, but the upper minors pitching, Beeks, Shepherd, and Mike Schwarren in Portland are really good, and it's kind of – being overshadowed by the rest of the farm system being shit.
Does Shepherd have three pitches, though, that he can rely on?
So I don't – I've never seen him pitch. So that's another reason I kind of want to see him in the majors, because I don't know. But I still – I mean, I don't think he's a starter in the majors, but I think we're seeing that he can be someone that you can throw out there for two or three innings, even in a high-leverage spot. And I think they like him a lot.
Right, and pitchers do tend to learn a lot from being a starter. You know,
you have to pitch differently.
Right, you can develop a third offering, something that you can mix in there a little bit more, and some of the best closers and relief pitchers in baseball are failed starters. I mean, the first guy I always think about when I think about failed starters is Wade Davis.
Yeah, and Andrew Miller, and I mean, it's a lot. And,
yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, obviously, that you have your best pitchers as starters through their development. I mean, Josh Hader was a starter too.
Yeah, there you
he's
go.
He's a failed starter. But, yeah. It makes sense. Then Shepard's not that guy, by the way, for anybody listening.
Not Hader. Not going to be Zach Hader, Josh Hader. Yeah. Injury updates. Pedroia, Andrew Pomerantz. Anything on those guys?
Not really. I know that's kind of a boring answer, but I haven't really heard anything, which is both good and bad, I guess, because there haven't been any setbacks, but...
Yeah, I heard Cora talk about Petey yesterday on the radio, and basically all he said about Petey was that he's been at the park and that his knee is still having some inflammation, and he didn't really give any specifics on the timeline. And then as far as Pomerantz, he started to throw the ball a little bit, but it seems like his neck is bothering him a little bit. So
oh, yeah, I did see that.
There's just – I mean, it doesn't seem like there's any close timeline for these two guys.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to rush either of them for different reasons. Pomerantz, they've been doing well without him. Steven Wright's been great. They don't really have any incentive to rush him back. I think people – I got really mad online yesterday about people being mean to Drew Pomerantz. But, I mean, he's good, and they – sorry. Their best rotation is him instead of Wright. And so I don't think I would bet on him getting back to the level he was last year, but the best way or the best chance of that happening is if they take their time with this. So I think they're going to take their time with him, and I think they're going to take their time with Pedroia because they don't really have another choice. They can't rush him back again only to have him hit the DL a week later.
Yeah.
It would be bad psyche for everybody. It would be a bad look for them. So they're not going to let that happen.
I wonder if they can trade Pomerantz at the deadline for, say, like a Anderson Espinosa type.
That was a good trade, man.
It was a good trade. It was. It worked out for the Sox. I hated that trade when it happened, but it ended up being a pretty good.
I think I hated it. It definitely took me by surprise, but after like a half hour, I kind of came around on it.
It took me a week of talking to people to.
Yeah, Pomerantz is good. It's I hate how people don't acknowledge that Pomerantz has been good for 2 years in a row.
Well, you know who else is good? Mookie Betts. And Mookie he's Betts is back. Very good. And timing still doesn't look like it's 100% there, but I kind of like the idea that Cora and him talked about the fact that it's kind of stupid for him because he would have had to go to A-ball. That's where his rehab assignment would have been. He's like, I think you're good enough to get your timing at the major league level. So that's probably a really solid decision.
I think it was – the offense had been really bad over the last, like, week before he came back. I think if they were rolling, they would have sent him to Salem and, like, let him do that. I think it was more about the major league team kind of looking like shit. And you're right, it wouldn't have been, like, that big of a deal. So they were willing to – kind of rush it a little bit, but I think it was more because they were looking bad without him.
Yeah, Cora's reasoning was kind of funny though. Like, he's got that that hand-eye coordination that pretty much no one else has. So if anybody can get their timing against big leaguers, it's Betts.
And I don't know that he doesn't have his timing back because he's made some good contact that just has found defenders. He's already hit a home run. I think he's going to have a big night tonight. I hope this gets out before the game, so I don't look like an idiot. But
oh, it'll be out before the game.
But, no, I think he's going to have a big night. I think they're going to win because of him.
Yeah, I'd like to see that. It'd be nice to see him dominate Paxton. A little update on the draft picks. Matt has been keeping track of the signees, and so far – every one of the top 11 has signed except for the number 2 pick, Decker, and the number 7 pick or 6 pick,
eight.
Eli Marrero? Eight. Okay. So that's pretty good. All those guys have signed, and what happened with Northcutt is sort of what we predicted last week on the podcast. They gave a bunch of guys underslot money, and he ended up getting basically what the third pick would have got, a little bit more than the third pick got for his signing spot.
Yeah. Decker's gonna sign. I don't know when. I have no doubt in my mind that he's gonna sign. Probably a little over slot. Maybe not. Maybe for slot value. Marrero, I would assume, is gonna sign. I haven't heard anything about him. So I don't really know there. But Decker will definitely be signed at some point. We don't really have the bonuses for anyone yet. But right now, Northcutt, his deal cuts into their pool pretty significantly. So they're going to have to go under slot on some of these guys who have signed, but their bonuses haven't come out. Good news is there's a couple of seniors left that are going to sign for way under slot. We saw it with Devlin Granberg, who's their sixth pick. He signed for 40,000 when slot was 240,000. So that's what happens to the seniors. That's where you save their money. So the Red Sox obviously know what they're doing. They're going to get this all done, and it's going to look fine.
Yeah. It's looking like a pretty decent draft for them so far, so.
Yeah, we should spinners start tonight, and Feltman's going to the spinners, so
Ooh.
he'll be the guy to watch there. Yeah, I was hoping they were at home. I was going to drive down there tonight, but they're not at home.
Well, sounds like a over the monster field trip needs to happen.
Yeah, we can stay at my parents' house.
Yeah, there we go. All right, so listener questions. We have a bunch of them tonight. You guys were jazzed up, so that's awesome. First one comes from friend of the podcast, Tom Pringle. He says, dark question here. If Mookie Betts killed someone and you were the only one who knew, could you live with yourself watching him receive a World Series ring with the Red Sox this season and many more seasons after? Matt, what would you do here?
I'd probably turn him in before any of that could happen. Yeah, don't murder people, Mookie Betts. So your question is negated by the fact that he would have been turned in already and would not
Well,
be leading to the World Series.
I'm just gonna say this, snitches get stitches, and
Yeah.
I ain't turning in Mookie
All right, well, it's a frightening way to live life, but okay.
I had to go with the opposite take there. Brandon Stewart. He says, the Machado talk is a pipe dream. The man we should really be focusing on is JT Realmuto. How serious do you think DD makes a run at him? That's phrased strange. What do you think? Do you think that he actually makes a run at this dude?
What with what?
Yeah.
Like the Machado thing makes sense because they have Devers who plays that position. I guess if the Marlins really like Christian Vasquez, you might be able to start a package with him and hope that they also like Groom and Chavis and their other high-end guys. But I mean, they're stretching really thin. If they're, I would love for them to get Realmuto. I don't think they have the pieces to make that happen.
So if it was Vasquez, Groom, and Chavis for Realmuto, do you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I
There's.
think anyone in this system, you trade for a guy like
Yeah, I mean,
Realmuto.
you don't go like crazy. You don't trade like Vasquez plus like seven prospects or something stupid like that. But yeah, I mean, there's nobody in the system that's like that good where you don't get a young. I mean, he's 27 in his prime under control for 3, 4 more years. So, I mean, you do that every time.
And it's a real good bet for the position, so.
Yeah, exactly. And he's not bad behind the plate. That would be a huge upgrade for them. But I honestly think that's more of a pipe dream than the Machado.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I
I
think
think they're
they're,
both pipe dreams, but like I said, the Machado thing, they have Devers at that position as a trade chip. It Chavis is or, sorry, Vasquez is not the trade chip that Devers is, obviously.
Yeah, Vasquez is he is what he is. He's fine. He's
Yeah,
totally
you can
fine.
live with him on your roster, but he's not, he doesn't have a ton of trade value.
No. Next question comes from Ski Chick, and she says, do you think the Sox will beef up the bullpen? I know we have some dudes, but it seems to always be one injury away. I guess I'll tackle this one first. I think that's the clear area where everybody in the media and everybody who writes tends to think that they're going to try and beef up the bullpen. I kind of think it's going to happen. I don't know if it's going to be a high impact move, though, because frankly, the bullpen has been really deep and pretty effective this year, so I don't know if a huge move is necessary. What do you think?
I think they're going to get a good arm, like a Britton or a Herrera or somebody like that. That's kind of been Dombrowski's MO every year he's come here. He's gotten somebody to put behind Kimbrel every year. They haven't always had a bullpen this good and a bullpen this trustworthy through the year. But, I mean, we've seen how important a deep bullpen is in the playoffs, and obviously the Red Sox are looking at a deep playoff run this year. And I mean, they've been connected to Herrera already this year. I believe he's a free agent after the season,
He
so he
is,
shouldn't
yep.
cost. Yeah, he shouldn't cost a huge package. I think that kind of makes a lot of sense. I also don't think that's the biggest need. I think that's the biggest move they're going to make, but I think they need some bench help in a real bad way.
Yeah, the bench doesn't seem to be ideal right now, and I think this next question sort of gets into that. Question comes from Gabe Faulkner, and he says, "Do you see Dombrowski making a move at the deadline? If so, what? And how long does Swihart stick around?" So let's talk about the second part of the question. Certainly, the way that the bench is set up right now, with either Holt or Nunez on the bench plus Swihart and a catcher, is not ideal. You want more bench flexibility than that. So, I mean, do you think that this is some, is it enough of a need where they will go out and get a Herrera and they'll also address the bench? You think they'll make multiple moves here?
Yeah, I hope so. Because I don't think addressing the bench is going to be that expensive. I know we're not talking about a star here, but they need somebody. Frankly, they need somebody better than Swihart.
Well, it seems like if you were a team that was out of it, it seems like it would make a hell of a lot of sense for you to swap a better bat who's a veteran right now for a guy like Swihart
Yeah,
and hope that
absolutely.
Swihart develops. Like that trade makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah, and I don't. I haven't like gone deep enough into this to know who these guys are. I mean, I'm talking totally theoretically, but I mean, if they could get an outfielder who hits right-handed, they should absolutely go do that because that is a big piece missing off this team. Honestly, Swihart has no place on this roster, and they're kind of stuck because they have nobody that's like clearly and significantly better than him.
There's no one at
So.
the upper minors that
I
makes
think
sense
Lynn
right
is
now.
better than him, but I don't think it's like by a huge margin, and he's kind of redundant with Holt.
And he doesn't really hit either. I mean, he hits fine, and he's
Yeah, well,
if he plays the
Swihart doesn't
outfield.
either, and Lynn's a
Right.
better runner, and Lynn's a better fielder. I think in a vacuum, he's clearly a better player. It's not enough of an upgrade, and they already have Rockholt, so.
Imagine if you could text your 2014 self and tell him that you would have just said on a
Yeah, I
podcast,
know.
Lynn is clearly a better player than Blake Swihart.
To be fair, Lynn was a pretty big signing back. I don't know, whenever that was, 2012, 2013, whenever it was. But yeah, I mean, this is obviously crazy, and it says more about Swihart than anything. But
Yeah, top
I mean,
20
they.
baseball prospectus prospect one year.
Lynn?
No, Blake Swihart. Top
Oh.
20
Oh,
overall.
I thought you meant in the system.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean. We've been over this wire thing. But the position player depth is so bad.
It's
Like,
terrible.
the players in Pawtucket on the 40-man roster are Lynn and Sam Travis. That's disgusting.
It's not good.
And they have, I love Marco Hernandez. I haven't heard anything about Marco Hernandez since, like, March. I don't know if he's still alive.
Who
And
knows what's
so,
going
I
on with
don't.
that shoulder? That was no joke, that surgery.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's. Shoulders are no joke, but I mean, I definitely don't think you can count on him. And so it's just him and Pedroia on the DL. They need another bat in a bad way.
Yep, I totally agree. Arm and a bat. Done. Get it done.
Do it.
Jack Bale asks our next question. How likely is it that the Red Sox trade for a third baseman? Would Beltre or Moustakas be realistic options? Matt, what do you think about either of these two options? Do you think that they would be anything the Red Sox would consider?
if Devers keeps struggling and they could get those guys for relatively cheap, I wouldn't be shocked to see like Beltre come in and Devers spend some time in Pawtucket and try and get back on track, and then kind of have a month to 6 weeks with Devers on the major league roster and on the bench with Beltre kind of as a mentor. I mean, that kind of sounds great to me. I don't think they're going to trade Beltre. That's kind of been the feeling for a couple of years now, that they're just never going to trade Beltre. So I don't think Moustakas is that realistic. I think he'll go to like Atlanta or something, but if they could get Beltre, I could see it.
Yeah, Beltre would be awesome. I would absolutely love to see him back with the Red Sox. And like you said, I mean, Devers is 21 years old. Sending him down for more seasoning for a little while and then having him on the bench in September would not be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, I have no problem sending him down. It's just you need somebody else to play there, and right now they don't have that.
And Moose is having a good season. He's also not a typical Red Sox type player. He's a
I think it's
low OBP
more.
guy.
I mean, the reason I like Beltre so much more is like the mentor aspect. Like, he would just be such a good guy to have in front of Devers on the depth chart for like 6 weeks and through the playoffs. And I don't really get that feeling with Moustakas. Nothing against him, but Beltre just is like a guy that everybody loves.
Yeah, he was a joy when he was on the team.
Oh, that was the best.
Yeah, definitely should have signed him. Next question comes from Lorenzo Inderegg, and he says, with Sale making an adjustment to throw harder, is it even more reason to go to a six-man rotation and get him rest over the course of the season?
Not all the time, but they should go. If they're going through like a long stretch without days off, then yeah, I like the idea of going six men in a turn every once in a while. But the division is too close to be doing all six man rotation all year. Because I don't know who's the six man right now. Is it Beeks?
Yeah, probably be Beeks. Yeah, at this point.
And I like Beeks, and I think he definitely deserves another chance at some point, but I don't want him having the ball every 6 days.
Yeah, I definitely think he'd get the nod over like Velasquez or a Justin Haley or anything like that. So,
Ooh, I don't know. Actually, maybe Haley would get the nod.
you think?
If it was like soon,
Yeah.
because Beeks, like, it just happened with Beeks, they might want him to have a couple more starts to get his confidence back up. I like Haley. He's not exciting. You don't want him on like a playoff rotation or anything, but I think he's a little underrated.
He seems to know how to pitch.
Yeah, he's
So.
fine. He was and he, I mean, he pitched a while in the majors last year, for the Twins. The only reason they kept him was because they were buyers for like 2 days before turning to sellers before making the playoffs.
Note on the Twins right here. I'm just gonna go on a tangent for a second.
So no.
People forget how good Johan Santana was. Like,
What?
I really feel like more than any other pitcher recently, I feel like people forget just like how ridiculous he was.
I don't even disagree. But where the hell did that come from?
I'm just thinking about Twins pitchers, man. Like, he was,
Yeah,
holy shit, was he
he
good.
was amazing. He
Oh.
was really good with the Mets too.
Yeah.
Yes, that is a true thing that you just said, and I'm speechless. I don't know where that came from.
Just
I thought you were
love
gonna
to
say
see
something about
Johan.
Sano getting sent down.
Nah, screw him, man.
He's,
Whatever.
yes.
Adam Sell asks us, who are we cheering for in the World Cup since there's no USA and like no Italy and no like a million other popular
Italy.
teams? Yeah, there's no Italy. So,
Yeah, what does that matter? You're gonna
well, I
root for
mean,
Italy? Are you Italian? You're not
no, I'm not
Italian, you're
Italian.
French, right?
No, I mean, whatever. Enough about me. But I'm
You are
not.
French, right? I'm assuming. Devereux?
Well, sort of.
Sounds French. I'm
Yeah.
French too. It's nothing to be ashamed of, man.
No, I'm not ashamed. Heritage is just complicated. But the thing is, a lot of people root for teams like Italy, you know, and like when Ireland makes the World Cup, like people root for Ireland and stuff like that. So it's just weird not having teams
I
like that.
guess. I don't
So.
really know anything about soccer.
No, I don't know much either. I guess I will say the one year I got really into it was 2006, I think it was, and I rooted for Germany, and then I was like kind of pumped when they won it last time. So I guess if everything's equal, I'll probably root for Germany, which I know is sort of like rooting for the Yankees.
Is it? Are they that good?
I don't know if it, I guess probably Brazil would be like rooting for the
Yeah,
Yankees,
that
but
would be
like
what I would think.
maybe it would be like rooting for the
For
Sox.
England. Listen, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I will say that in high school, I was like the only one of my friends that didn't play on the soccer team. So I spent a lot of time around soccer, and I had a lot of chances to like soccer, and I just don't really like soccer. But it's on at 8 o'clock in the morning, and there's nothing else on at 8 o'clock in the morning. So I have been watching, and I have decided to root for Costa Rica for
Nice.
literally no reason. I don't think they're very good, but I was looking for kind of an obscure country that's not problematic. And as far as I know, Costa Rica isn't super problematic, at least. And plus, I know people that have gone there and said it's really nice. So go
Yeah.
Costa Rica.
N not only is Costa Rica really nice, apparently it's one of like the most eco-friendly places on Earth. Like they do a lot of
I can get behind that.
green
Go
stuff.
Costa Rica.
Yeah, that's all.
I don't think they're very good at soccer though, right?
No, we're better than the United States, apparently.
Well, apparently.
Yeah, I like that pick.
Isn't it coming to the US?
Yeah,
Like,
2029. It's gonna be.
yeah.
I think the breakdown is gonna be about 80% or so of the games are gonna take place in the United States,
Yeah,
and
then
then,
Canada and Mexico. I think there's
yeah.
some games in Boston.
Yeah, well, they're talking about maybe the Patriots getting some games out at
Okay.
Gillette. So,
That makes sense. I
yeah.
definitely won't be going to
Depends on the. Yeah, those prices are gonna be nuts.
that.
There's no way I'm paying for that. Justin Gabbard asks our next question. He says, "Is Pedroia afraid of wet grass?" I don't think Pedroia is afraid of wet grass. I think the trainers are afraid of Pedroia on wet grass with his bum knee.
What? I don't understand this question.
Well, so there were a few times when he was on rehab stints where it would like rain and they wouldn't
Yeah.
allow him
Oh,
to
is that
play.
what that's about?
Yeah.
That's literally every player on rehab. They never let a player on rehab play when it's been raining. Why would they do that?
Yeah, or you could slip on the bag. There's a bunch of
Yeah.
different things that could happen.
It's a game that doesn't matter. They're not going to have them play. Oh, God damn it. What a stupid question. Bad question, Justin. Bad question.
Be better, Justin.
Yeah, jeez.
Mark Anderson asks, or more realistically, what's your pipe dream trade deadline deal? Does DeGrom get dealt? What does the bullpen look like in October? What is your pipe dream deal?
I guess Machado.
Machado and a
Because,
signing, right?
yeah, Machado and Britain with Machado staying here. I guess DeGrom will not get dealt because the Mets are the Mets. And
Also, it
there's
doesn't make
no.
sense, right? To deal him.
Why wouldn't it make sense? The Mets are awful.
Yeah, but like DeGrom still has control and the Mets aren't that far off. Like you could see a healthy Mets team
Well,
being
if the
like
Mets were any other team other than the Mets, they wouldn't be that far off, but they are the Mets.
guess that's
So
true.
I would trade DeGrom if I were them. I don't think they're going to. I kind of have a bad feeling if they do, he's going to go to the Yankees.
No way they do that. No way. They would take every good young player from the Yankees for like the next 5 years
I
in a
don't know,
deal like
man.
that. I mean the deal would probably start with Gleyber.
Yeah, that's what they're saying. I don't know. I feel like we always feel like these trades should start with a guy like that, and then doesn't. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a package to like Andujar and Frazier and like Rutherford and maybe like Abreu, or like a bunch of like really good players that aren't superstars like Torres. I could see something like the Yankees have the depth to make something like that happen.
If that happened and then they went and signed Machado to plug third, I would be so
Oh,
pissed.
I would cry for like 6 weeks.
That'd be awful.
That would be a nightmare. But like I said, I don't think he's going to get traded. What was the other one? What does the bullpen look like?
Yeah.
I say Kimbrel, Herrera, Kelly, Barnes, and company.
I've been
Those are like
feeling
four
like
guys.
Herrera is the most likely guy too to end up on the Red Sox, so
Yeah, I think he's like the right mix of being really good and not costing a ton.
Yeah,
He's
makes
kind of
sense.
underrated too. He's been on a bad team for a couple of years. When the Royals were good, he was like the third reliever, even though he was dominant.
Yeah, he's had more dominant years in the past 4 seasons than he has had off years. Last year was an off year for him, but this year he's been incredible,
Yeah,
so.
it's been awesome. And he's been the only good thing about their bullpen.
Yeah, it's been a miserable pitching staff in general for that team. I guess it's been a miserable everything except for like a couple
Although his
guys.
strikeouts are way down, which is fine with me. Red Sox have enough strikeout guys in their bullpen, but I don't know. I talked to you about this. Jared Hughes is like another guy that I'm kind of intrigued by as like a guy who will cost almost nothing. He's been really good, and he just reminds me of Brad Ziegler so much.
But Brad
And
Ziegler kind of wasn't great here.
what? Brad Ziegler was amazing.
I don't remember him being great.
He was fantastic. He started striking out guys like out of nowhere. Yeah, he had a 1.52 ERA. He was striking out over a batter an inning. He had a 2.71 FIP. He was awesome.
What was the thing with him? They like didn't use him. They didn't use him enough. Wasn't that the thing? There was something weird.
I don't remember. I remember him being. I thought he was a pretty big part of that, because that was probably Dombrowski's best trade, like just from a straight value standpoint. I'm 100% convinced that he tricked the Diamondbacks into trading for the wrong Basabe brother, and so I that's like, it's not even a joke, because there's no way they would have done that trade for the wrong Basabe brother. That made no sense at the time. I think Dombrowski played them, and he got an incredible. And I don't know how they got him to strike out over a batter per inning, but that was the best trade. And so I kind of like Jared Hughes as like a weak contact guy that maybe they can Brian Bannister would be able to get more strikeouts out of. That wouldn't be a trade to rile up the fan base or anything, but I would enjoy it.
If you really like Brad Ziegler, an interesting point about Ziegler is that he has only a half year left on his deal as well. Has a 6.16 ERA.
Oh, he's been awful. That was another one of Dabrowski's good moves, is to let him
But
go
I'm just
after that.
saying, like his underlying numbers right now, he's got like a
No, I'm not saying he's
354
good now.
xFIP. No, I'm saying that maybe there's something there. You could probably get him for
In
nothing.
Ziggler?
Yeah.
Oh, no, he's toast, man.
He's 38. He's like,
He's real bad.
I think he's getting save opportunities. He's got 9
No.
saves on the year. How ridiculous is
He's not
that?
their he was well he's been their closer most of the year. He just got taken out of the role.
Yeah, Bear Claw. Bear Claw had a couple for them too, so.
Bear Claw's their closer now.
Yeah, he's actually a good player.
He's all right.
Yeah. All right. Well, that about does it for the podcast for this week. Guys, thank you very much for submitting questions. If you like the podcast, please go on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere you get your shows. Rate and review us there and make sure you subscribe. You can follow us both on Twitter. You can follow Matt on Twitter at @MattRYCollins, and you can follow Matt, more importantly, for baseball stuff at @OverTheMonster. And then you can follow me on Twitter at @DevJake, and we'll be with you next week at the same time.